Our first author anticipates our theme, which today concerns those who deem themselves entitled to a position above us humble folk. Their self-obsessed mission is to rule, veritable, powerful parasites, oligarchs whose fierce, arrogant flame ignites in return a responding fire of insurgency. As we rebel against them, a state of emergency. But enough, I cease to continue my poetic struggle as I introduce our author. Welcome, Douglas, Douglas Carswell.
Thank you very much for that generous introduction, Barry. Can anyone tell me what this is? Good. Good guess. Any bids? Any further bids on that?
It's a rock.
A bit more than that.
Flint.
We're getting warmer. Spearhead. Getting very close.
Arrowhead.
Getting closer still. It is indeed a hand axe, a Stone Age hand axe, and I found it in my Essex vegetable garden when I was digging for potatoes one evening. And it's about 250,000 years old, and it would have been made at least two ice ages ago by an early kind of hominid. And I was struck when I first found it. I was struck, first of all, by the thought that I could be the first human being holding this since the individual who made it. Quite a thought. The only thing left of their entire existence was a piece of flint that they sharpened, perhaps to scavenge a bit of bone. And I pondered, I thought, what were they like? What was this place we call Essex like back 250,000 years ago? And then I went and did something very, very 21st century. I got out my iPhone, and holding the hand axe in one hand, I took a photo of it with my iPhone in the other. And then the thought struck me that led to this book. Two handheld tools, two tools designed to be held in the palm of a human hand, separated by 250,000 years of human progress. Both of them were the cutting edge technology of the day, literally in the case of a hand axe. And both of them are tools to do multiple tasks. Actually, a hand axe, I've since discovered, has got a pointy end for attacking things and a scrapey end for scraping things. And of course, we all know our smartphones have multiple apps on them. So how did we get from one to the other? That is the subject of my book. That is, I think, the story of human progress. My book is an attempt to explain how we got from one to the other. Now, I earlier made some rather glib comparisons, implying that the two objects were rather similar. In fact, it's the contrast between them that really is striking. A flint hand axe is made from a single material. Flint. It is almost certainly made, if not right where my vegetable patch in Essex sits, within a few miles of there, and it was almost certainly made by a single person. You only need the knowledge that one person can contain in their own head to make one of these. An iPhone, on the other hand, is made with multiple materials. It's got plastic, iron, aluminium, cobalt, silicon, lots and lots of different materials. It's certainly not made locally. It is made globally by a sprawling supply chain that goes around the world. And there is no one person alive, not even the late, great Steve Jobs, knew enough to be able to make from scratch an iPhone. Take the simplest component of an iPhone, the plastic casing. Probably tens of thousands of people were involved in producing just that. The team who extracted the oil from the ground and perhaps the Arabian Gulf, a team who distilled it, the team who transported it across the distant ocean, the team who molded it into the current shape it is in China. A hand axe is a product of a world of almost total self-sufficiency. It is a product of a world of a subsistence existence, where the people who lived were absolute dirt poor, of grinding poverty, which was the default human condition until very recently. An iPhone, on the other hand, is a product of a world of almost total interdependence, where we rely on other people, people we've never met in distant lands, to supply us with our basic needs. It's that interdependence, I argue in my book, this process of ever-widening specialization and exchange that is the engine that has elevated our species from the swamp to the stars. It explains why, as a species, we can sit in an aluminium can at 30,000 feet to cross the Atlantic. It explains why, as a species, we can order fresh vegetables in midwinter. And it explains that miracle that I still marvel at, that is Amazon Prime. Now, my book is an attempt to look at how specialization and exchange has elevated our species. First of all, why is it that it's all been so recent? Actually, it's only in the past 200 or 300 years that we've got humongously richer. For most of the millennia since that hand axe was made, there was zero progress at all. Why? I do find some examples, pre the modern age, of a few societies where specialization and exchange elevates the condition. The republics of Greek and Roman antiquity in the Middle Ages, Song China, Abbasid Iraq, and that absolute standout example, Venice, the Venetian Republic. And then, of course, the Dutch Republic, who had their industrial revolution before the English industrial revolution, where specialization and exchange then begins to affect more and more people starting in northwestern Europe. But that's pretty much it before the modern age. And my book is an attempt to explain why. Why was it that all previous attempts at using specialization and exchange to elevate standards were so short-lived? I argue it's because societies are prey to parasitic elites. Parasitic elites have kept humans poor, and where societies have, for a brief, fleeting moment, enriched themselves, parasitic elites at the apex of society have come along to stuff out any innovation. My book, however, is first and foremost a manifesto, a demand, an insistence that we all cheer up. Yeah. The world today is getting better. I'm not just talking about the fact that Boris is now Prime Minister. I don't know what your politics are, but that certainly put a spring in my step. The world is getting better. Now, it's an antidote to the endless pessimism we get. We are bombarded by bad news, terror attacks, war in the Middle East, oceans polluted by plastic, supposed gender inequality, climate change. But pessimism's nothing new. I remember when I was growing up in the 70s being told that acid rain and nuclear war were going to wipe us out. Then in the 80s it was epidemics and famine. Today it's global warming and apparently some asteroid impact may get us. But hang on, in fact, surely the story is not that we're about to be wiped out, but that the world is getting better. We live today longer, healthier, better lives than any generation in human history. In the 1960s, global life expectancy was 52. Today, global life expectancy is 71. That's an extra 20 years on average for everyone. And it's not just in the West. I grew up in Uganda. When I was growing up in Uganda in the 1980s, the average life expectancy in that country was 40 and falling. Today, life expectancy in that country is going so fast, they're catching up with us. Infant mortality has fallen dramatically around the world, in this country and especially in Africa. Now, there are some people who think, royal couples, for example, all these extra people are bad news. They've assumed that all these extra people mean that we're going to be scrambling over the same finite resources. Absolute tosh. That's the sort of nonsense that you hear from Extinction Rebellion. Actually, the truth is, we're much richer than ever before. In the UK, we're roughly twice as rich as our grandparents were. Spain, they're roughly four times richer than they were in the 1960s. The Dutch are roughly five times richer than they were in the 1960s. The Japanese, despite two decades of stagnation, are nearly six times richer than they were in the early 1960s. China in 1950 was as poor as they were 2,000 years before. In the past 30 years in China, more wealth has been created than in the entire period from the birth of Jesus to the death of Chairman Mao. It's an extraordinary improvement in the condition of millions of people. Put this in a context without statistics. When I was growing up, people used the phrase in newspapers to describe rich people. They called them the jet set. You're a member of the jet set if you could afford to fly. I just dropped my 10-year-old daughter off at Gatwick Airport this morning, and judging by the enormous queues, there are an awful lot of people who can now join the jet set. It's available for £30 if you book online in advance. When I was growing up, I'm told, you had to wait 6 weeks to have British Telecom install a telephone in your house, if you were lucky. And once you had the telephone in your house, you had to make a special request to book ahead if you wanted to phone Australia at Christmas time. My 10-year-old babbles away to her nephew, her cousin, in Sydney using FaceTime at virtually no cost. It's extraordinary how the world has got better for so many of us. And finally, you know, the world's not just better. We're not just living longer, happier, healthier lives. Actually, the world is cleaner and greener too. There are 99% fewer oil spills now than there were in 1970. The giant panda was once the emblem of the worldwide conservation movement. Literally, it was the logo on the World Wildlife Fund website. The giant panda is no longer endangered. It's been taken off the endangered list. When I went to see the mountain gorillas in Rwanda in the early 80s, there were less than 400 left. I met someone the other day who went to see them, and there are well over 1,000. Global greening means that there is more forest around in most parts of the world than ever before. The beaver is back in England rivers for the first time in nearly a millennium. So my book is an anthem to say, buy this book. It will cheer you up. It will make you smile. It may make you laugh inadvertently. It will put a spring in your step, and I very much hope you will enjoy the history too. Thank you.